Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy football advice, speculation, and whatever stupid stuff they decide to drop into the show. Now here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to a conference championship edition of Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchian. My co-host this week is Brian Johnson, as it has been the last several weeks. Hi, Brian.
Yeah, are Scott and Matt okay?
Yeah, I'm starting to worry about them a little bit. I can only presume the worst.
I'll reach out.
Yeah. To quote the Naked Gun movies, which I just watched a little of last night, because if I bump into it, it's hard not to watch it.
Which one?
Went down in a freak dirigible accident, I believe. The first Naked Gun movie. With Frank Drebin and
two and a half, and a 33 and a third.
That's right. There were others. There were others. First one's classic, though. Yeah. And the opening scene with OJ when he breaks into the ship, and it's 60 minutes of just raw nonsense hilarity that slays me every time I see it.
It's hard to like OJ these days, these decades, but watching Naked Gun is about
as close as it gets. Exactly. Nordberg. It's such a funny scene. And there's so many great just zingers in that movie. Oh, man. The Zuckers and Pat Proft at the peak of their game, I think.
You got me wanting to watch Naked Gun. It's been a long time.
Yeah. It holds up shockingly well.
I'm sure.
It really does. There's very few bits in that that are really time sensitive, I'm happy to say. So this is a conference championship edition of Fantasy Football Weekly, Brian. That means that we're going to concentrate on the two remaining games in the NFL schedule. And like last week, our focus is on the DFS side, something we love to talk about but can't normally do. And we're doing it because for people who are playing playoff long fantasy football, there's not like bench start decisions to make. It's like, you know, you're starting everybody. Yeah. I think the people that still have decisions to make right now are the people that are playing DFS.
And the information will certainly be useful for those in the, you know, where you pick up, you can use a player once type pool. I'm in one of those where each round, you know, you play a quarterback, wide receiver, tight end, running back. You can only use them once. So
helpful there too.
It will certainly help.
For sure. Yeah. And I'll mention this, the letter grades you're going to hear are relative to the cost of the player. Patrick Mahomes might normally be an A grade, but we'll see what Brian's going to give him, but weighed against his salary, is he an A grade?
And, of course, against the other salaries of the other quarterbacks. Honestly.
Yeah, which is relevant as well.
We could almost go A, B, C, D just for the quarterbacks if we wanted to.
Almost, because there's four of them.
Yep.
All right, I'm going to let you start, Brian. You've got the Bills traveling to the Chiefs.
Yeah, as to be expected, a pretty high over-under here, right around 54 points. These teams did play in Week 6. Kansas City won 26-17. And lastly, the weather looking like low 40s with a little bit of rain in Kansas City, but the winds won't be much of a factor, under 10 miles per hour. So there's that. Starting on the Buffalo side, Josh Allen, 6.9K on DraftKings. In that first meeting, he had only 122 passing yards, two passing touchdowns, and a pick. He did have 8 carries for 42 yards. The Chiefs, before last week, had allowed multiple passing touchdowns in 8 straight games.
Yeah.
Baker only had 1 passing touchdown. He pretty much had
two. Yeah.
That one, touchback. That
Rashard Higgins.
Where do you stand on that rule, by the way?
They got to change it.
It needs to change, but what's your number one solution? Mine is wherever the ball is fumbled, and if it goes out of the end zone, it's 10 yards from there. So in that instance, the Browns,
it would have
been first and goal from the 10 or the 11-yard line.
Yeah,
or you can move it back even further, but turning over the ball and then giving on the 20.
And they're not kidding. Exactly. It's double jeopardy.
Well, hopefully they change that. But anyway, back to the matchup. Allen, because of the health of Mahomes, who we'll talk about in a minute, has the highest ceiling on this slate with his feet and his arm in this matchup. It's not a great matchup on paper, even though they've allowed multiple passing touchdowns in 8 straight games, the Chiefs, that is. Rashad Breeland wasn't looking like he was going to play with a concussion.
I think he practiced all week. I think he's going.
So they'll be at full strength in their secondary. So it's not like a super high passing ceiling for Allen, but not a very scary floor at all. And when you factor in his rushing ability,
I think they're I like the high ceiling here because I don't think they're going to run at all.
No, not much at all. But I do respect the secondary, especially with Honey Badger back there playing great football. But Allen, I'm going to give him the A. If I was rolling out one lineup, he would probably be the quarterback. I'd go with just. It probably would have been Mahomes, but I'm worried about the toe. We'll get to that in a second. So An A for Allen. Over to his receivers. And by the way, all the wide receivers on DraftKings, way underpriced this week. It's very soft. You can squeeze in a lot of these top pass catchers. When we're talking top pass catchers, we'll start with Stephon Diggs. Only 7,000. He should be at least $8,000, in my opinion. In the first meeting, he had 6 catches, 46 yards, and a touchdown. Kind of a quiet game by Diggs standards.
Yeah.
We've run out of good things to say about Diggs. To fade him, rolling out one lineup, it would be uber contrarian at this point. He'll probably be 60 to 70% owned in the bigger tournaments. He was listed with an oblique injury all week, but not too worried about that.
They took him off the injury report on Friday.
So, again, if Breshad Breeland somehow does not sit, major boon for Diggs, but even if Breeland goes...
I'm telling you, Breeland's going to go.
It's official, official?
No, they haven't said it's official. He has not said he's cleared the concussion protocol, but he practiced all week. I think he's likely to go.
Even though Baker didn't put up big numbers, his receivers got open. Breeland only, he allowed 5 catches on 6 targets. Charvarius Ward gave up 5 catches, 58 yards, and a touchdown on 6 targets. Those are the boundary receivers. So Diggs, you just have to give him an A. But if you're running multiple lineups, it would be in your best interest to fade him in one or two because if he does go belly up, you have a huge edge on the field there. So an A for Diggs. And the rest of the receivers gets a little muddled. We'll start with John Brown, who had 0 catches in the wild card week. In the wild card game, he also had 0 catches on 4 targets when these teams met in week 6. But last week, big bounce back for Smokey, as was to be expected. He was only 10% owned in the Millionaire Maker, which is kind of a shocker. But at 4.3K, that is way too cheap for John Brown.
Yep.
We saw Rashard Higgins operating as the number 2 receiver last week. He had a pretty good game, should have had a touchdown, basically did. So I'm going to give Brown a B here. The only real concern is his ownership percentage is going to be through the roof when it comes to Bills receivers, at least, probably looking at 25-30%. So just a B for Brown. Then over to Cole Beasley, who just isn't looking right, that knee injury.
Well, they took him off the injury report on Friday, so I got to assume that.
Well, they took him off on Wednesday, and then he reappeared on Thursday. So they took him off Friday, so hopefully he doesn't reappear on Saturday. But played 63% of the snaps last week, not only 0 catches on only 2 targets. At 4.1K, though, if that knee isn't too much of a worry, people are going to be off of him big time. Janarius Sneed, I believe.
He's pretty good. He's pretty good.
Might be the best matchup, though, when it comes to wide receiver cornerback for the Bills. So I'm going to give Beasley... He's not a safe cash game play because his floor is scary if he gets 0 catches on 2 targets again. But from a tournament perspective, I'm intrigued by him at that cheap price point, and we could see the Beasley of old 15-20 fantasy points. So I'm going to give him a B at 4.1K. The Bills have a lot of wide receivers, by the way. We've got two more to talk about.
But they may not have Gabriel Davis.
He's the most
all
dinged
of
up.
The week's practice. I mean, I think I don't think he's going to go based on the practices that we got or lack of thereof.
Yeah, he hurt his ankle in the divisional round, played 46% of the snaps before getting hurt. He also had 0 catches before getting hurt. So
that's the one I lay off.
Yeah, if I'm dumpster diving, it's going to be Isaiah McKenzie at 3.1K. He played the fewest snaps of any wide receiver for Buffalo last week, but he actually did have 2 catches, only 8 yards, of course. But at 3.1K, he's a punt play with a dinged-up Davis, and Beasley not convinced he's 100%. If you're not going to play Beasley, McKenzie might be the guy you want to pair.
You called him a punt play. He's also a special teams guy.
I like that. And if you want to pair it with the defense, that's always a favorite angle of mine, because if he happens
double
to
dip.
Return a kick, you get the big bonus with the team defense. And the Bills did have do they have 2 defensive special teams touchdowns? Just 1. They had that 99-yard interception return. That was brutal. So, yeah, I like McKenzie as a standalone play, or you pair him with the Bills defense, which is not ideal going up against Kansas City, or stacking along with Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs would be an obvious addition. And you know what? Dawson Knox might be a 4th you might want to throw in for the Voltron stack at 2.8K. very touchdown dependent, always has been, but this is a very strong matchup. The Browns tight ends did not score against Kansas City last week, but they did combine for 6 catches, 75 yards on 9 targets.
It's good numbers.
And before that game, the Chiefs had surrendered 6 tight end touchdowns over their last 7 games. So we're going to talk about the Chiefs in a minute, but it's another week where you can go 2 tight ends very easily with Travis Kelce being arguably the top option of any player. So
I almost think you have to start your entire DFS portfolio has to start a tight end. Mm. Am I going Kelce? Am I going Tonyan? Or am I going elsewhere?
Right.
And because, though, you know, there's Kelce who's super expensive. There's Tonyan who's reasonably priced, and then you're just dumpster diving. And I think that, to me, that's the catalyst for all the rest of my lineup decisions.
Yeah, if you're not going to go 2 tight ends and you're not going to go elite with Kelce being the most elite and Tonyan mm-hmm. the second best option, and you could maybe throw Gronk in there, but yeah, Dawson Knox certainly in play. He might be a little more than just touchdown dependent in this one. We shall see. And lastly, to the running backs for Buffalo, not a ton to talk about. We're really just going to talk about Devin Singletary. At 4.5K, he was pretty chalky last week at this price point, which I was shocked by because we just knew he wasn't going to do anything. And there was much better.
He didn't get a carry for the whole first quarter.
There was much better options out there, but there's not a ton of great options at running back this week. So despite, you know, just 10 touches for 37 scoreless combo yards last week, he only had 45 scoreless combo yards in the first meeting. And in that game, Zach Moss only had 10 rushing yards, so the running backs did nothing like they have all year, basically, for the Bills. But, man, Singletary played 84% of the snaps. His 33 pass routes run led all Week 19 running backs. And even though Buffalo is not going to run the ball a lot, the options out there are just so brutal and tough to pick between. We'll get to Fournette and Ronald Jones. And
yep. I got a strong angle in there that we'll talk about.
Yeah, and we even see Aaron Jones continue to get vultured at times by Jamal Williams, and A.J. Dillon even got some runs. So I'm going to give Singletary a very strong B here. He doesn't have a high ceiling, but he is on the field. He will be on the field a lot. And Kansas City did allow the 4th most catches to running backs this season. And even though his chalk level will probably be pretty high, even though he wet the bed last week, I like Singletary. I can't say I like him, but at that price, he's a strong B for me. And we're not going to talk about T.J. Yeldon or any other Buffalo back. All right.
Chiefs side.
Got to start with Patrick Mahomes, of course, 7.6K. Cleared the concussion protocol. He's good to go there, but the toe-foot issue, really toe-toe.
Yeah.
Turf toe, ankle.
He does not. The mobility doesn't look right. And Brian, the single best thing that Patrick Mahomes does is create big plays when he's out of the pocket. And when if he can't get out of the pocket cleanly and he doesn't have the same mobility and speed, I don't know. I think that takes a huge weapon out of his arsenal. And He's also a rushing touchdown threat. You know, scored last week, and you know that may come off the table a bit here too. So, Mahomes is my least favorite quarterback on the entire slate because of the cost that he comes in and my concerns about the ankle.
Yep, and you're basically alluding to it. Even when he's outside of the pocket, we're not even meaning rushing the ball.
No, just off balance
ad hoc throws he can make. He's going to be hampered by that toe, but no higher ceiling still for any quarter. Like, if he can manage the pain, he's probably going to come in at the 3rd highest owned quarterback because of the price and because of the toe injury. So, I'm still going to give him a B. He would just be a plug him in and play him A for me if it wasn't for this toe injury. But I'm very concerned as are you. So just a B for Mahomes at 7.6K. Travis Kelce comes in at 8K, tied with, I believe, Davante Adams, the priciest player on the slate. Mark Andrews wet the bed big time last week.
Huge way. They threw to Andrews like, he was either 9 or 11 times last week, and he had like 2 catches.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
So, and then in the first meeting, Kelce had 5 catches, 65 yards, 2 touchdowns. The Bills have been a money matchup for tight ends all season long, including the wild card round when Indy tight ends totaled like 14 catches, 150 yards, and a touchdown. So I said fading Stephon Diggs would be the most contrarian play. Fading Travis Kelce I don't see how you can do it.
I'm going to give you an angle to do it. But you're right. If I'm going to spend big money on somebody, Kelsey's the play.
The way to get contrarian with it is, again, use him as a flex player, or you go two tight ends. But you'll see Kelsey probably as the highest.
You can go two tight ends.
Okay, I can't wait to hear what you have to say. I love tight end talk. Tyreek Hill, 7.2K, way too cheap. But he did have he struggled when these teams met week six, just 3 catches for 20 yards. He did have 1 carry for 5 yards. Tre'Davious White is a concern by the name, but he's only played 2% of his snaps from the slot this year.
He will not be in the slot.
Tyreek has taken nearly 60% of his snaps from the slot, so they'll probably see more from
Taron Johnson is your slot cornerback, and he's probably the worst cornerback they have on the field. And he is by Pro Football Focus grade.
And the concern here, there's really no concern with Hill. I like that he didn't have a big game last week, really. Mm-hmm. Didn't have a big game if people are going to look into the first matchup with Buffalo, but it all goes back to Patrick Mahomes. But
so
Hill
who would you rather have, Kelsey or Hill? So you're going to you're going to spend big dollars on one or the other.
As a one-off, it might be Hill, because I could see him running. He can have a 60-yard touchdown rush with ease or anything like that.
Rush,
you don't have to.
Yeah.
And so if I had to pick one, it would be Hill. It would be painful to not use Kelsey, but Hill will probably be, his ownership percentage will probably be half that of Kelsey. So I would go Hill, and you also save the $800 in your salary cap. So a very strong B for Tyreek Hill. Definitely not going to give a strong B to Sammy Watkins, even though it looks like he will play in this game, which would be a revenge game, don't forget. His former team, Buffalo Bills, who drafted him way too high with the 8th overall pick.
They did.
So I don't know how can be too much revenge when they did him that favor.
Robert Woods, Sammy Watkins have gone on to long, successful careers having left Buffalo.
Yep.
Yeah. But that was the old Buffalo.
Yeah, that was the old Buffalo. They're a brand new
Marshawn
Buffalo.
Marshawn Lynch.
Now.
I mean, there are a lot of players that did it.
But the calf injury has to worry you with Watkins. He could always aggravate that. He could be forced to sit the rest of the game. But again, we got to worry about Mahomes and his mobility, how his toe is going to affect his game. But at 3.8K, that's pretty cheap for the number two receiver on the Chiefs. And when Watkins is healthy, he basically is the number two. There isn't much muddied waters with the Marcus Robinson and Mecole Hardman talk. So I'll give Watkins a C, but I don't like starting a guy who I'm not confident is going to finish the game.
Yeah,
so
I'm with you.
He's a very, very high-risk, high-reward tournament play, not a safe cash game and play at all. And assuming Watkins plays, that really only puts DeMarcus Robinson into play for me. Mecole Hardman and Byron Pringle, when Watkins is healthy, their role has not been big enough. They're guys you might contemplate in like the one-game showdown slate. So I will give Robinson a very soft C at 3.7K, just in under Watkins. I'd probably rather play Robinson over Watkins just because I'm more confident he can start the game. So that's it for the pass catchers. And
now you got a whole other headache with the running backs, right?
Yeah.
So Le'Veon Bell may not go. We have two guys that are basically game time decisions, both guys nursing injuries, and a running game that's been ineffective for most of the season for the Chiefs.
Yeah, the one game, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the player here referencing along with Bell, who might not play. It sort of seems like he will, but this is one of the games where he was very effective in the regular season when he had the 26 carries for 161 yards, and he didn't score, but he had a monster game on the ground. He's at 5,000. Bell's at 4.1K. We're just not going to talk about Le'Veon Bell. His knee swelled up on Thursday's practice, and he only played 16% of the snaps.
Also, he stinks.
And he stinks. So he's dead to us. It's Darrell Williams comes in just under CEH at 4.8K. He actually scored in that first meeting. he had 20. So the Chiefs ran all over the Bills in that first game. Even Darwin Thompson had a few carries. So Darrell Williams might be the highest owned running back on the slate this week, especially if Edwards-Helaire sits.
Yeah, if Edwards-Helaire sits, he probably will be.
My angle is I might go Thompson a little. If it's just looking like Thompson and Williams active and healthy for the Chiefs.
Yeah, if Bell is out and CEH is out.
And Bell is out even if he's in.
But he mucks up the works for Thompson. You can't play Thompson if CEH is active.
No.
You can't.
No, not if he's inactive. Then, of course, Williams in elite-level play, but Thompson would definitely be in play for me. If CEH out, Williams is an A, despite he'll be the highest owned running back on the slate. You have to run him out there. The Ravens running backs combined for 150 yards on the ground against Buffalo last week. So CEH in, he's a C because you can't trust him to finish the game. He would be an uber contrarian, mm-hmm. high risk, high reward play. Williams would be a B. But then if CEH out, Williams A. And I give Thompson a pretty safe C. I think he would still see 10, 12 touches in this game.
When we come back, we'll go through the NFC side. Bucks taking on the Packers, another Week 6 rematch. And that one was a one-sided demolition of the Packers by the Bucks. We'll tell you what to expect when we come back. Welcome back, Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchin and Brian Johnson with you. We just broke down Chiefs and Bills. Now,
that was a painstaking process to break that game. Especially the Chiefs, man, what a mess.
Yeah, that was 18 minutes on one game.
Question marks abound for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for the Bills, for that matter.
Bucks take on the Packers. I don't put too much weight in the Week 6 matchup, Brian. It's just so long ago, and it was so one-sided.
Was in Tampa, right?
Tampa rolled them. And Tampa destroyed them.
I don't think Devontae Adams played that game. I'll look it up while you
I
go.
Believe you are correct.
I'll check
not,
it out.
He was not in that game. The weather is usually a factor for Green Bay at this time of year, but it's going to be unseasonably warm, around 30 degrees at kickoff. Not really any wind to speak of. A small chance of precipitation right around the freezing mark, which could manifest itself as snow.
Or
sleet.
Or
sneet.
Oh, there you
yes.
go.
You remember the ice bowl from 1967. This could be the sneet bowl. I'm hoping that's the case.
The all-you-can-sneet buffet?
I would love it.
In Green Bay?
Let's start on the Tampa side, and Ronald Jones is my favorite play of the week. I love it.
Getting bad deja vu from this.
Yeah. Now, anytime you're trying to guess the Bruce Arians timeshare, it's fraught with danger. But it ought to be a Ronald Jones game, and at $4,600, I like him here. Now, Jones and Fournette split carries almost evenly last week, but Jones was clearly better. He averaged a full yard per carry more, and Jones was the better runner all year long. And I think if we look at what Bruce Arians does, as opposed to what he says, because he lies all the time, in games with both Fournette and Jones healthy, Fournette only had more carries than Jones four times all year. That's it, just four. I mean, Jones, when these guys are both healthy, and that's the case here, then Jones is likely to get the work. Now, the Packers' run defense is improved from where it was early in the year, but it's still the easiest way to beat the Packers is on the ground. And I think that's going to happen here. Cam Akers put up 5 yards per carry, 90 yards last week. The prior game, David Montgomery, 133 total yards. Game before that, Carolina's rotation of backs topped 100 yards. We had Derrick Henry at 98 yards. This almost every team gets something done on the ground against Green Bay.
And back to Rojo versus Fournette real quick. For those that don't remember, in the wild card round against Washington, Jones hurt himself in pregame warmups. No one had any idea, and he got scratched late, which screwed over a lot of people. But it wasn't like he got benched or anything like that.
Right. That was injury.
Yes.
That's right.
And he was coming back from that essentially last week when he looked better than Fournette.
In the Week 6 meeting between these teams, Jones ran for 113 yards and two scores. I'd like Jones, $4,600, A grade. For Fournette, if I feel strongly about Ronald Jones, obviously I don't like Fournette. And I'm fading him at $5,300. He's more expensive. And I think that Jones is going to take too many of his touches. And I think the only angle for Fournette is that he'll probably catch more passes because he almost always does. But more passes for him is like two.
Yeah, and I'm not saying I think this is going to happen, but if you were a believer that the Bucs are going to win this game, and maybe quite convincingly by running the ball, playing good defense, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be so opposed to starting both Tampa Bay running backs, because if you believe they're going to win, control the ball, you pair those two with the Tampa defense. You don't want a Green Bay running back if your belief is Tampa Bay is going
to.
And then in the other game we just talked about, there's not many enticing names there. So if you're all in on the Bucks, I wouldn't be against playing both backs.
It's an interesting strategy. Let's go to the passing game for Tom Brady, who comes in at $6,100. He is the cheapest of the four quarterbacks here. Green Bay's pass defense has been terrific, which is a lot of why. From December forward, the Packers are allowing just 206 passing yards and 0.7 passing touchdowns per game. Mm. That's it. The best angle for Brady, though, and this is a very legitimate angle, is the Packers The Packers have one great cornerback, Jaire Alexander. Then there's a pretty sizable drop down to their second best cornerback, and that's their slot corner, Chandon Sullivan. Mm-hmm. And then there's a massive drop down to Kevin King, who may not even go. They just signed Tre'Mon Williams as a free agent. They may have to play him and start him in this game. I mean, this is a disaster. This is an extremely thin set of receivers. Here comes Brady with arguably four good wide receiver targets by himself, and that's with Antonio Brown out. They have Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Tyler Johnson, Scotty Miller. I mean, they've got, because of the depth of targets that Brady's got, he's always got somebody to find. So I like Tom Brady at $6,100. Jaire Alexander probably shuts down Mike Evans, and that's why I've only got a C grade. By the way, I've got a B grade on Tom Brady. C grade on Mike Evans at $5,800. He is the fourth most expensive wide receiver on the board. He had one catch last week, and he's going to draw the most of Jaire Alexander. Now, Alexander is not a shadow. They shadowed with him more at the beginning of the year, mm-hmm. but really second half of the year, he mostly played one side. But that is Evans' most common side. So I think Evans is going to get more of Jaire Alexander, and that's the trouble. For Evans, you're shooting for a touchdown. His one catch last week was a touchdown. He's the most targeted receiver from inside the 10-yard line. So you're hoping for a touchdown with Evans, but I don't like banking on low-volume, touchdown-dependent guys, and Mike Evans fits that bill. C grade for $5,800. Chris Godwin's far more interesting. He's been a drop machine in the playoffs with six drops in two games. And at some point, you worry a little bit if he's lost Brady's confidence. But with Antonio Brown out, I think he's still got to throw to Chris Godwin. And he's got a somewhat favorable matchup against middle-of-the-pack cornerback Chandon Sullivan. Over the past three games, Sullivan has allowed 92% of his passes, the passes in his coverage, to be completed. So I like Godwin. I've got a B grade on Godwin. And Mike, I would play him at less money than Evans. I would play him over Evans.
Yeah, I like that call. Potential future Packer, Chris Godwin. Might treat this as an audition of sorts.
Maybe.
I don't know if he wants to go to Green Bay. You probably have a lot of fun with Adams and Rodgers, though, that's for sure.
With Antonio Brown ruled out, let's talk about Tyler Johnson.
Yeah.
Bare minimum price of $3,000. He will most often line up on the side of the field that's got either a hobbled Kevin King or a depth cornerback. That's a sneaky play. Now, I don't think he's going to get big volume because he almost never does get big volume, but he might be able to turn 3, 4, 5 catches into something half decent against the rattiest of the Packers cornerbacks.
I like it. And for those who don't know, Tyler Johnson out of Minnesota, so weather won't be a factor for him.
No.
And the hatred for Wisconsin is just ingrained in his DNA. I like the Johnson call.
We're leaving both of the tight ends on the bench, Gronkowski and Brate. They're cheap, but they cannibalize each other. Brate getting more targets. Gronk's running more routes. I don't want to touch it. Let's go over to the Green Bay side. I have a series of A grades for the Packers, and I want to be in there all in the passing game. Let's begin with Aaron Rodgers at $6,500, the third highest price out of the four quarterbacks, and a full $1,000 less than Patrick Mahomes. But I like him here. Green Bay runs what is normally a balanced offense, but Tampa sees the highest passing rate in the NFL. 65% of all plays are passes, and this is not that complicated. Rodgers is the MVP. It's very hard to run on the Bucs. And the Buccaneers are far easier to pass on.
Than the Rams, especially.
Right, and he just got done torching the Rams, far better secondary. So I think Rodgers is an A grade at $6,500. If I were gonna build one lineup, it would be built around Aaron Rodgers. Let's go to Davante Adams at $8,000. You'll have to pay a very heavy premium here, but I think Adams is probably worth it. He just put up a solid game against a dramatically better Rams secondary, and he'll see both of the corners that Tampa's got, Jamel Dean and Carlton Davis. Between them, they've allowed 11 touchdowns on the season. That is a lot. Dean allowed 70 yards in the wild card game. Davis has allowed 72 and 92 yards in the two playoff games. Those are bad numbers for any one cornerback. So I like Adams here, and if you're going to splurge on one expensive player, I think Adams has got to be in that conversation.
He did play in this game. It was his first game back from injury. He had 6 catches for 61 yards on 10 targets in week 6.
Thank you very
much. Got hurt in week 2, came back for this game in week 6.
Got it.
And then he scored in every other game afterwards, essentially.
Adams is not my only A grade in the passing game, though. Alan Lazard at $4,200 is one of my favorite plays of the week. He runs predominantly from the slot where he matches up against Sean Murphy Bunting. He has allowed 7 touchdowns in his coverage. Only one cornerback in the entire league allowed more than 7 touchdowns in his coverage.
Wow.
Sean Murphy Bunting allowed 7. The passer rating on balls thrown in his coverage, 127 for Sean Murphy Bunting. The path of least resistance runs right through the slot to Alan Lazard, $4,200. Then.
Should have had 2 touchdowns last week. He alligator armed a long one that he should have had before his first one. So he almost had a monster game.
Then. Another great play, and I think the only other play, if you're not going to go Travis Kelce for half the price, $3,600, Robert Tonyan. Love him here. He had 12 touchdowns on the season. He's been fantasy relevant in 7 of the past 8 games. Since December, the Bucs have given up big games to Logan Thomas last week, Irv Smith, Hayden Hurst again. This is just since December. The Bucs were bottom 7 in tight end catches, and bottom 7 in tight end touchdowns allowed during the regular season. I think Tonyan is the other place to pivot to tight end. So would you rather have Tonyan at $3,600, or are you spending on Kelce?
Man, Tonyan is way too cheap.
He's too cheap. He's so wrongly priced at $3,600.
It's not like you really need to struggle to save salary, but if you take Tonyan over Kelce, you certainly can throw a lineup together with Adams, Diggs, and probably Tyreek Hill all in there. So,
right, that's too compelling for me. So that's why I'm playing Tonyan. Last receiver I'll mention, he gets just a C grade, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, as your all-or-nothing guy. When he doesn't score, you basically get nothing. He's very lightly targeted, and so he's got to turn a couple of catches into something special. It's possible he will. This team, as I mentioned, does give up a lot of wide receiver touchdowns, so maybe he will. But $3,900 to me can be spent better places. Not that it's a lot of money. Then let's go to the running backs. Aaron Jones, $6,500, is one of my least favorite plays of the week. He is the most expensive runner on the entire slate, and he has the hardest matchup. Now, you may look at Alvin Kamara's 85 rushing yards last week and go, well, that's 85 yards against Tampa's defense. Boy, don't read into that. It's a trap. Tampa was number 1 in rushing yards allowed, number 1 in rushing yards per carry allowed. And keep in mind, for Kamara, no Latavius Murray. So he got all that extra work. Now, Aaron Jones, last week, I sat here on this podcast and said, they've been saving him for the playoffs. They're going to run him like crazy. They still only gave him 43% of the carries, which is bizarre. But he still got to like 90 yards. He had a good game when everything was said and done. But the fact that they still didn't use him that way was really weird that they didn't use him a lot.
I noticed. And then to see A.J. Dillon, even before Jamal Williams, on the second drive, is like, oh, man.
How strange, right? Now, here's the other reason you don't want Aaron Jones. So Alvin Kamara finds his way to 85 rushing yards last week. Saints lose by double digits. The only other team that ran successfully on Tampa all year long were the Vikings. With Dalvin Cook, they lost by double digits. It doesn't pay to run on the Bucs.
Nope.
There's no upside to it. You lose by double digits if you go through whatever it takes to establish the run against the Bucs. So don't do it. And Aaron Jones is a bench grade for me as the most expensive runner on the board. Jamal Williams is a C grade at $4,400. He'll be tempting because he's affordable, and if A.J. Dillon misses the game, I think Dillon's going to go. Then maybe Williams gets like half the work. But still, for all the reasons I mentioned before, if I don't like Jones, I can't much like Williams, even if he is cheaper.
4 teams is not a lot. 2 games is not a lot for a slate. But this is probably the worst running back menu I've ever seen. It's pretty brutal.
I would put Ronald Jones on my menu.
I like the guys
are out there. I think that's the guy I'm going to take.
And I'm worried about if I'm going to stack one of these games, it's probably the NFC side. I fear the AFC game being
more defensive, low
scoring, even though the over-under is a little bit higher. And then just like Singletary and the Buffalo defense seems like a nice pairing to go along with Rojo. I think that is where I'd start my lineup build if I had one lineup.
Yeah,
it's, I like those two backs.
Yeah,
as much as you can.
Well,
like,
yeah, I don't like Singletary much, but no.
He'll be on the field though. That's all you know. He's gonna.
I kind of like your Jones Fournette angle, but Fournette's awfully pricey at 5,300.
Yeah, that's a little too high.
I think it is too high. I don't love it. Thank you for listening. We will do. We will do this same breakdown in 2 weeks for the Super Bowl. We'll have a show in between there that won't be this kind of breakdown, but we'll talk about various things over
Pro
the
Bowl?
Super Bowl week. Yeah, Pro Bowl, fantasy football, Pro Bowl. Ugh, gross. I don't even know what the format is this year. They're not playing a game, obviously.
I have no idea.
I don't either. It's probably for the best that we don't know. Thank you for listening. Appreciate everybody that has made it to the end of 35 minutes of breaking down two games. Very impressive. Normally, during our show, every game is 4 to 6 minutes of breakdown.
So, yeah, once it goes by like 4 minutes, I start to look around. I'm like, I gotta shut up now.
Exactly. We're at the 35-ish minute mark, and we did two games.
People are clinging to their football. They won't mind.
I think you're right about that. Talk to you in a week, everybody.
Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.